Hey everyone, before we get into it today, if you've ever thought about starting your own podcast or taking your current one to the next level, you have to check out Podigy Podcast. They didn't just help us launch this show, which we need a lot of help with. They made it look and sound amazing with custom artwork, killer music, and they guided us through the launching of the show step by step. Now they handle everything for us, editing, producing, you name it. All we do is hit record and they do the rest. Trust me. If you're serious about podcasting, you need them in your corner. Click the link in the show notes to schedule a free one-on-one podcast game plan session with them. You won't be sorry. Welcome to The Path Podcast, the podcast that provides transformative insights for authentic success. My name is Chris Weiss, and together with my partners, Stuart Ferguson and Toby Quinton, we make up True Path Consulting, where our mission is to maximize executive performance and drive personal growth by guiding leaders on a journey of self-fulfillment and true success. I wanted to thank you for pressing play on whatever device you're listening to us on today. It means a lot to us that you're here. Our hope is that through our stories and interviews, you will find something in yourself, something that moves you to get curious, and possibly something that triggers you to take action in your life. You see, our goal in this podcast and in our coaching practice is to help people find their ideal selves without needing that motivation of that personal or professional crisis. We'll bring up topics and curate discussions that will help you take action to find out how you are showing up in the roles that are or should be a priority in your life, ultimately helping you paint the picture of who you want to be and walking with you to figure out what the heck's getting in your way from becoming your ideal self. We only get one shot at this awesome thing called life, so let's stop being okay with being miserably comfortable and instead be more intentional in following a path of meaning and purpose. With that being said, I'd like to formally welcome in my partners that are going on this journey with us. Today, we're going to do something a little bit different, and we're going to walk in a topic, and Toby, you're going to be our moderator, if you will, so I'll pass it over to you, buddy.
Yeah, you got it. Thanks, Chris. You know, the topic today came about through a conversation with a client. And when I thought about it, I've had multiple similar conversations over many years, but just so recently had one that struck a chord with me and I thought would be a good conversation for us. So I appreciate you both allowing me to walk this one in. But the concept and the conversations around psychological safety and how it came about through this conversation with a client was, I was talking to some DE&I representatives, if you will, within an organization, and they were asking about engagement. And they started there. And as we started down that conversation and that very important one around employee engagement and how to raise the level of engagement, I asked about the psychological safety. And really what came up was there was some curiosity about how those two connect. And you know, the thought for me is that the psychological safety is a belief that you're able to bring ideas, questions, thoughts, mistakes, and concerns in the environment that you work. And most notably in some of the corporate meetings, if you will, that all three of us have been a part of, whether we led or we were participants of. And this idea or this belief, if you will, is it a safe environment? It was one that really spoke to me, and it certainly spoke to that client we talked about. Because when you look at engagement surveys, most people know that, you know, when you look at 10 employees, three are heavily engaged, three are disengaged, and then you have the group in between. And I'm just spitballing those, but it's around about those types of figures. And Stu, you know that, and Chris, you know that as well from some of the data that we've had. And as I started doing more research and have certainly been involved as a coach for as many years as I have, you know, a big thing I always talk about is how safe is it in your team, and how is your culture? Is it psychologically safe? And as I'm a coach into a team session and we do some team coaching, I'll always start the program off with my goal as a coach in this is to try to create a psychologically safe environment. So the stats and the studies have also shown, as they mirror with the engagement ones, is only 3 out of 10. There was a Gallup survey that I can send you, Chris, that we can certainly put out there. But a Gallup survey that three out of 10 believe that their opinions count, or that they can speak their truth to that. They can bring their points and their concerns and their pushback, if you will. So it's pretty mind boggling that only 3 out of 10 in a room of 10 would believe that they can speak their truth to that. So that's this topic today. And I want to get your guys' take on it, is certainly your own experiences, both professionally, but also personally. As we talked before this, that we hit play on this, you know, there's a lot too on the personal side about psychological safety and the groups of friends that we keep, and even the new friends that we try to bring into our community and our tribes, if you will. If you said before, Stu, you know, how safe do we feel about that? Because when we're not feeling safe there, we'll opt out of it. We do it work through disengagement, but we'll also do that in our lives, and we'll come more and more isolated in just the pockets that we have. So that's the concept, psychological safety. That's how I define it, or at least I've learned to define it by. And I'm curious about your guys' thoughts and experiences with psychologically safe environments as leaders of, and then also participants. And I know that's more corporate centric, but also on the personal side, what's your guys' beliefs and thoughts on that? So, Stu, I'd love to start with you. Just what are you hearing, and what's it, yeah, what's coming up for you?
I appreciate that, Tob. It's a great topic. First place I go to is where I have, you know, created those environments and where I've led those environments, and what are some of the things that were present that made them feel safe. And, you know, a couple of things that come to mind is one of them being a clarity around why we're together, the shared goal of the moment. Does vulnerability and does honesty help us get to meet that end goal quicker? And if that's the case, then really defining what that safe environment should look like, right? The other part is leading by example. And if you are the biggest title in that room, to provide some vulnerability and openness and sharing that at the beginning of that interaction and creating that opportunity to mirror the behavior that you hope to see. But what's honestly coming to the front of my mind, and this might not to be controversial or push back, but it really comes down to that. I think when I first hear psychological safety, or I think safe environment, sometimes I also feel that we don't talk enough about that conflict is still going to be present in those rooms and in those moments, and that conflict itself isn't something that lacks safety, but conflict, to be able to have healthy conflict in an environment to build on it, is mission critical. And so I think sometimes people hear psychological safety and they think, well, that's a room of no conflict, or those are going to be conversations that there's no collision. And that is not true in my experience, that the best environments have lots of collision and lots of conflict, but a tremendous amount of unity and community to solve them together, but not in the absence. When I've led rooms where I've tried to manage that, a lack of conflict, one, I lost my team, and two, in very way, I lost the effectiveness of being the leader. So that's what comes to mind. And again, not trying to be controversial, but I think people may think that the conflict's a bad thing. I actually think in a work environment or even at home, it's a very good thing in the right place with the right people.
I love that.
I love that. There was a, hey, I got a question for you. And you probably didn't know I was going to ask you this. It just kind of came to mind. Like, there was a moment, and I've been in rooms with you two a ton, and you guys create unbelievable amount of psychological safety, right? Like, just having you in there, Tob, like, you navigate when people kind of go off kilter, you bring them back really quick. There was a couple times, right, when we weren't performing well, and it's just interesting, like, when you're used to walking into a psychologically safe room where you can be yourself and you can speak your truth and you can create conflict because you know it's going to be received well. It was just interesting a couple times in my career. I'm just interested in you guys' thoughts on this. It's like when you're stressed and you're not performing, and then you walk into that room, how much even more important it is, right? Like, to create that psychological, because it did, there's a couple of times that it did just turn, you probably remember, it did just turn into conflict, and it did turn into like, oh shit, I just, like, now the spotlight's on me. Now I'm getting torn down. I don't know if we assessed how much psychological safe, how much more effort we needed to create in that moment because of where we were and because of performance or because of our insecure, whatever that, so I think it's just important when you're thinking about, it's not just the same, it's not just having Toby in the room, right? Because that's not fair to him. It's also addressing, like, all right, how's everybody entering this room, right? Where are we in our career? Where are we in our performance? Where are we, just like we talked about in a previous podcast, like where are we right now? And really dialoguing that, or really cataloging that, excuse me, and figuring out, all right, we need to be a little bit more upfront with our discussions and our content just to create that. Do you remember that? Like, do you agree with that?
You talking to me or to?
Yeah.
Well, I remember. I remember a lot of those. I've been with you for over 20 years, so I remember a few of those moments. But I think to your point, I think there's healthy organizations and healthy communities are going to challenge the status quo and push the evolution of skill and alignment. You know, there's going to, so, you know, when I'm in a place of vulnerability and I walk into a room where I need psychological safety, or I'm hoping for it, mm-hmm. I also have to keep in mind that not everybody else in the room is at the same place I am. And that, that as a leader, me being the leader, having to manage those two forces, right? The force of people that want to progress and aren't carrying a lot of monkeys or baggage and are ready to move forward, and those that are coming in heavy. And how do you create that environment where you still want to feed the ones that are driving towards the goal, but also want to create an environment where that person that's not feeling safe can catch up, you know, that over a period of a day or two can get caught up. But, you know, I think it does come down to the fact that, to me, it's safety is about the general understanding of the context of the room and the commitment from everybody in there to be heard and to be respectful of those that speak. But what it does not mean is that your emotion is going to be prioritized over the rest of the room or the rest of the topic. That this is a you journey, and our responsibility is to create a room that allows you to work through you in a lot of ways. And that might be the wrong way to look at it, but.
Hey, I love having an ex-president on this phone call because it's so good to kind of hear his point of view of it. And I'm walking in, hey, psychological safety is this, and we can bring up our concerns, our mistakes. No, but I think you're hitting a great point. And here's what my point on that is, it's not about people being nice to each other. It's a place where we can brainstorm with healthy tension. That's really, for me, what it is. And there, listen, when we talk about meetings, we all know that there's some instructional meetings.
Right.
We're rolling out, this is what we're doing, this is where we're going, and this is how we're going to get there. This isn't necessarily, now it doesn't mean that you don't need safety in those for sure, but if it's more instructional versus it's a conversation about the health of our culture, the leadership impact, where we are as employees and how engaged we are. Now we're talking about a different room, and that room for a leader, in order for them to get the benefit, and I do mean the rich benefit of feedback and in the moment opinions and thoughts, safety is required. And so, again, I think it's a great, Stu. I really love that you said what you did, because it isn't about just kumbaya and everybody's opinion matters and counts and all this. It's not that. I think all of their voices do count. It doesn't mean I have to agree with what you're saying, but you can walk it in and bring it into this conversation. And you just think of the outcome that can be made because of that. So, and that's where people feel more included. That's where the diversity of people's thoughts and their backgrounds and their experiences, when we lose those voices and the what's at risk. And that's where I want to go real quick with you both, of what's at risk when we don't have it, and the experiences when you didn't, and you heard the crickets in the room when you open it up for, has anybody got anything to say in these rooms? And I know you both know a thing or two about that. And then the other side of it, how did you feel as a leader walking out of those rooms that you may not have named it, boy, that was a real safe environment, but you heard a lot and you heard people kind of have that healthy conflict with one another. I'm curious about your own experiences with that. Chris, love for you to open that up of just, again, when you had it and when you didn't, just anything from a leader lens or anything from even a participant lens, what made you feel like you did and what made you feel like you didn't?
Yeah, when I had it as a leader, it was, you know, there was emotion, there was disagreement, there was all the feels, right? And we worked through them. I think when it's just stale and people are safe and there's not a lot of feeling and emotion, then you know you don't have it, right? Like, you know, people aren't willing to take that risk. And a lot of times as a leader, I would talk to people before the meeting, right? Or before the interaction, and just start the psychological safety there, right? Before you even walked in the door. So they knew that that was the expectation. And then I had their back, and then we were going to get to where we needed to go. And then we were all aligned. But yeah, I think I think when I had it, Tobe, like we dealt with whatever was presented. Right. And we worked through it as a team. And I think that was powerful. I think that brought us together as a team. Right. Or it's same thing, Stu, you brought it home, right? Like it's when you create that at home and your kids tell you something, it's just like, holy cow. And then how it's received with a hug and tears and a conversation. And then they're more willing to do it again, you know, and more willing to have open-ended conversations with you and discussions with you. And if it's like, oh, no, that's not who we are. We don't do that, or that's not what we agree on. And it's like shut down. Then they're not going to continue to bring that stuff to you. We have a very open family, right? Like Joy loves when I talk about it to everybody that listens to the podcast. But like we do. I mean, you can tell I am, right? Like, and we talk about alcohol, we talk about sex, and we talk about like, because I'd rather have that open conversation and know what's going on and make sure my kids feel comfortable with having that than not. And then having to a 15-year-old or an 18-year-old make those decisions on their own without any context or any background from us. So I think when you have it, it's just, you know, it's the feels that go along with it, Tobe. And then when you don't have it, it's the fear and the you know, like I remember being in rooms where I didn't feel I was contributing it to, or I was sitting as an audience and didn't feel like I had it. And I knew I couldn't say what I wanted to say, man. And then I had to hold that in. Mm. And it just that's the ripple, Stu, that you talk about a lot, right? The pebble that creates the ripple. And then you go back to your room or you go back to home and you just, and then it creates that, right? That negative, usually it's negative thought, right? That I can't say this and this isn't the team. And it just creates a dysfunction, right? Whether in the family unit or in the business unit. And I think those are the two things that really jump out to me, whether when I've had it and when I haven't had it. Stu, what about you, buddy?
Thanks, Chris.
Yeah. I mean, really well said. For me, there's a couple things that come to mind, you know, when I've had it. The one thing that's always present in a psychologically safe environment for me is that all members have the ability to be seen and to have been heard, and that they have an opportunity to contribute to the conversation, even with my kids, right? And on top of that, what's at the foundation of that is trust, right? That respect and that trust that we can be seen and we can be heard for who we are. And so when it's not there, it's personal attacks. It's political. It's positioning. It's the curiosity is to have to weaponize the answer and not to embrace it and create this, you know, at the pillar, at the foundation of when it's not there, what's at the core, not trust, but fear. Fear of judgment, fear of not being accepted or not being enough. And I've been in rooms where that's been intentionally created, where people intentionally create those political environments, or the leader is so disengaged that they no longer understand that that's the environment that they're leading. And so to me, it's like, you know, when someone brings up an idea, and Chris, I want to go back to one of your scenarios. I can remember vividly you bringing up an idea that was counter to what the room had wanted. And it was where I thought it was a safe room because of the dialogue. Where I missed as the leader that it was no longer psychologically safe is the feedback you were receiving was no longer about trying to understand your position. It moved to correcting you and why your position was wrong. Mm-hmm. And so I go back to that idea of being seen and being heard and trusted versus the politicized or the manipulating of the conversation. I always go back to, if I'm creating a great environment, then people aren't there to be corrected. They're there to be heard. And if that's the environment, then man, I can't think of a more productive meeting. When people are curious, that safety tends to thrive. When people are judgmental, it dies, in my experience.
Yeah.
Dude.
Yeah. Thanks, Stu. That's great. And thank you both. I've, when I see it working, I saw it with you guys. And it was when it was really a collaborative conversation. It was a curious, there's a high level of curiosity, curious conversation with one another, and highly competitive people in a group, in a room, doesn't bode well for those two things and collaboration and curiosity. But it was the commitment that you guys had that you pushed in with your own truth, but the commitment to speak your own truth, but also from that spirit of modeling that it was infectious in the room. And that's another, you know, not to get to the tips per se right away, but that's when it feels right. It's to the point, the feels, Chris, it's you just know it. And how do you know it? It's because people are bringing up their truths in that. I time and time again, I'll talk to leaders that'll run meetings and then the post conversation we'll have, you know, they'll get prepped and they'll want to do some coaching prior to that. And, you know, whether it's a big meeting, Stu, when you're on stage type of thing, same with you, Chris, I remember some of those meetings and then post that. Well, how'd it go? Well, no one said anything. Right. Didn't hear much from anybody. It was crickets in the room. And again, it doesn't, again, it depends on the situation, but you know, the leader then leaning back into, well, why do you think that might be? And what are some of the things that you might've done in order to bring people into the room? And again, how safe was that environment to get that level of feedback? And so we get so frustrated when we don't have that. But I think the point then I want to make on that is that there are some things that you can do ahead of time or during they can create and open the door. I say create, it at least give the invitation for us to lean more into these environments of psychological safety and not comfort, by the way. I want to keep stressing that. I think, Stu, that was, I'm going to keep hitting that drum because that's the right one. These aren't going to be comfortable environments, but with healthy and safe tension, they're going to be very productive environments. And I think as leaders and as teammates in that, that's, we all want to be a part of that. So few of the things that I would say, and I would love to hear your guys' thoughts on these as well. Some things that I coach around and that I would talk to people about is that, you know, from a leadership perspective, psychological safety, if you understand the definition, it's something you want. Making sure that that's very intentional with the team that you lead is critical. So making a very an explicit priority to you that one of the ingredients of this culture I'm trying to create with you, and it's dependent on you and me, is that we create this environment of safety and not comfort. So I think that in itself, telegraphing that message to people, puts you on note, by the way, and it will give you an embedded in that as some feedback. Well, you're not creating it. You know, you're quick to respond. Are you quick to fix me? Because we love it to fix people. We love it to compete. Yep. We love it to make ourselves look good at the expense of others from that competitive side. But I think, again, I can listen to what you have to say and disagree with what you have to say, and I see it differently. And I think that the three of us model this well, I believe, in our own practice together, but we see things differently. And I think that's the spirit of, as long as our voices are in the room and we all are implicitly focused on creating safety with each other, respect with each other, and those things, that's where we are right now. And it's because we're actually putting our hands on the steering wheel to make that happen. I think we also need to make sure that people speak up. Right. Well, I didn't hear from anybody. And this person, think of all the psychological stories we make up about the people's engagement or lack thereof, or their commitment, or whether they're good employees or not, or they're high flyers or not. Or, and boy, I always get it on the back end of these conversations of, well, Johnny and Susan aren't committed. Why not? Well, they didn't say anything in the meeting. Did you bring them into the meeting? So right. I, again, it's a little tongue in cheek. You guys have heard me say it, but I always say, rather than calling them out, call them in. So let's call people into these meetings. And that, again, gets to the discomfort that should be expected in the environment that we're trying to create with a business meeting and a growth meeting and engagement meeting. So how do you call them into the room? So I think naming them, hey, Chris, do you have any thoughts on this subject? You know, Stu, what are you, you know, how do you see this differently? Or where are you? Or we read the nonverbals, what we call them in you know, with, hey, I see your eyes roll, or I see you maybe having some tough times with this. Like, bring them in the room. Most people want to be brought into the room. They want to feel included. Totally. Most people do. I think we make the mistake of thinking, hey, they don't want to. I don't want to be singled out. I don't want to. Hey, your discomfort in public speaking doesn't mean you don't want to be involved. It's just you're uncomfortable in that. So how do we help you with that? I think we also got to look at, and I think you hit this, Stu, a little bit about that conflict side, but you know, how do we handle conflict? There's a lot that goes into giving and receiving feedback. I think learning how to have conflict, is very important. In my life, you guys know my journey. I've been around people that don't know how to handle conflict. Okay. Plates are flying and people are saying things they shouldn't say to each other. That's an environment I'm very comfortable. I'd say I'm uncomfortable in, but I'm used to, but it doesn't bode well for safety. Doesn't bode well for any of that. So how do we deal with disagreement? How do I honor that your point you made? I want to hear it. I want to take it on board, but I don't agree with it. And I see it differently. How we handle conflict is incredibly important. And again, leaders are going to be willing to do the work in that space rather than have the conflict hand up and show up and then it blows up in your face. And then the other thing I would just say is just how do we handle failure? I think we all could use a little bit of help on that in our own personal lives and certainly teams. But the minute somebody cops to, I failed here, or I, you know, that the team pulls them in and says, you failed in that. How we handle that as an indictment, as a less than, as a, we just go crazy with failure. And yet we're so surprised when no one's going to admit to it. Like, wow, I don't know why anybody just isn't honest about their failures. And I'm like, how do you handle failure? And that's usually a question that I ask the leader, and the leader gets cross-eyed. What do you mean by that? And I'm like, well,
just deal with it.
That's probably something you need to work on, is how do you handle that? And then I get the quick answer. Well, we don't fail around here. And we don't, what do you want us excited about being failing? And I'm just, I'm just rubbing my head like, so if failure is never an option to you, how safe is the environment of learning, growing, and learning through these failures? And you know, I don't think anybody ever signed up to fail at all times. I think they all want to be successful. But if you can't talk about failure and can't bring it in and roll it in, then you're creating an environment, to me, that is doomed to fail. So just, those are a few hits there of tips that I would say, and I want to fold back to you guys on that, that those are things that I'm talking to people with. And I know that we also, I'm sure you guys are hitting on all of these fronts as ideas and thoughts of things that to create more safety. But Stu, what are your quick hits on that, on what I rolled in? And then maybe you've got some things to add to it.
No, a couple of takeaways, just suggestions are, you know, I think it's important for the leader to make sure to, you know, in creating that environment, is that each of the members that are attending those types of meetings or engagements, they understand the value that you see in them and the role that they play in creating that psychological safety and to balance conflict, right? There's somebody in there that has psychological size in that room. You know, they're peers, but they're probably a little elevated. You know, as a leader, how are you leveraging those people to help make that room less emotional or less combative, you know, a more trusting, again, a more safe place. And so how do you empower your leaders to create that is equally as important. The other thing is when there's conflict or there is between you and someone on your team, one of the things I learned a long time ago is conflict's okay as long as there's closure. Right. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times we have conflict without closure. And so the power of the circle back, which is a term, but, you know, a day, 24 hours, 8 hours later, 3 hours later, to go back to that individual and say, I don't know that we were hearing each other. Let's talk it out again. Let's try to connect again. The power of creating the environment outside of the meeting so that this is who we are as a team. We're a psychologically safe team that exists outside of these events and these meetings. And then the last thing is, you know, to make sure that we're curious after that meeting. As the leader at happy hour, at dinner, wherever you are, to sit with people and ask the question, not about the content, but the question of how did the flow of the conversation go? Be curious on how information shared and how information is received and how the room cares about it. I think leaders get far too focused on the agenda items on their list and less about how was the impact of the time together and how productive was it for each of us, because we know all the work happens after the meeting. It's in that moment we ask the question, people care more about how they feel than what they learned. And how do you create an environment where that's the priority? That's what comes to mind.
Thanks, Stu. That's great. Chris?
Yeah, mine's you know, we talk a lot about leadership and a lot about meetings and all that other stuff, but it's funny. I think So we, as a leader, putting into a leader concept, being in those rooms, creating the psychologically safe environments, I think it helps us outside of those rooms too, right? Like, we're in an interesting dynamic in our country right now, and the polarizing nature of the conversations we're having with one another. Mm-hmm. And there's been a lot of times, you know, I don't feel psychologically safe, but knowing that curiosity wins, right? Curiosity diffuses. Let's put it that way. A lot of times it creates a space where people feel comfortable enough to share, and it could potentially diffuse emotion, right? Because you showed curiosity in me, I'm going to tell you how I feel, but I feel safe in telling you that you're not going to, you know, categorize me or put me in a bucket or whatever. So I'm going to give you my opinion, and then we can have a conversation about that. I just feel like the four that you, it gives you the tools to have those conversations, right? Like right now, it's tough out there to have a conversation with anybody about politics, about this, about that, because it's just either like everybody wants to throw their stuff on you. But when you receive it from a place of curiosity, the conversation changes immediately. Now, when you receive it just as confrontational, just as directive, or just as demonstrative as it's brought to you, then you're in a shitstorm. Mm. Right. So I just think those tools that you gave us and those competencies that you shared with us, I think they help us not only in a boardroom or a meeting at corporate, but also when you're talking to your neighbor about the election or about your beliefs or about your or about anything. So I just think it's holistic. It's not just in a meeting room and as a leader in a company. It's just a leader of your community, a leader of your family. I think it transcends. So that's just where I went with it when you were saying that stuff, because it's been very front and center for me lately. And it's, you know, I try to tap into that stuff because I don't want to not talk to friends or whatever that have different beliefs. But to create that curiosity has helped.
Yeah, you got also, it. Well, hey, just before I throw it to you, Chris, to close this out, I think from a psychological safety perspective, just the reminder of just, you know, knowing that the definition of it is, and thinking about yourself. And I love how you brought it home to a real home aspect to it, Chris, of the parent you want to be in our instances, you know, like, do we want a psychologically safe environment for our kiddos? Right. So leaders, you know, we've hit on that, but in the corporate world, but I just know that you enjoy, and she's going to now go, now Toby's talking about me, but you enjoy, you know, just that family of, like, the safety to be able to speak my truth with my parents. Yeah. To me, that's you can't put a price tag on that. And I get it. You know, that's going to come with a lot of different things, but with the level of anxiety and that is out there in this world that all three of us know quite well. And unfortunately our kids have all had touches with that, if not currently in those, to feel safe, to be able to talk about our, you know, feelings, and certainly where we are and where they are in their own journeys. I just can't emphasize how important that is. And then you know, connect engagement on that. I mean, they're going to be engaged in that family, let alone their own lives. I mean, it's a beautiful place. So, anyway, I just appreciate you guys and your contributions to this topic. I know it's near and dear to you as it is me. I hope I didn't disclose too much family business on this call, but I think we're all kind of walking our own paths on this stuff. And I know for me, it's just, it's an important topic, if you will.
Love it too. Couldn't agree more, bud. Well, hey, thanks everyone for joining us on the path today. Remember, every journey is unique, like Toby has said, and every step you take shapes that journey. So keep exploring, stay curious, and give yourself grace as you forge your path. Until the next time, stay true to yourself and keep walking the path. Have a great day.